Hello and welcome to Pineapple Classrooms, a blog and podcast celebrating the teachers of Albuquerque. Pineapple Classrooms is a collaborative project that works to bring teachers together through shared stories and honest conversations. These conversations are so integral to our work. Every time we open our classroom door, we initiate a conversation that leads to our growth and to the growth of teachers around us. Together, we celebrate success, learn from failure, and always aspire to do our best. And of course, we learn best when we're learning from each other. Pineapples are the international symbol of hospitality. So Pineapple Classrooms, the project aims to open up our classroom doors, initiate a conversation, and open up our practice so that we can learn from one another. So welcome to Pineapple Classrooms, the place where conversations happen, and it all starts with opening the door. My name is Kathy Wolfe James, and I'm the editor and host of Pineapple Classrooms. I'm a second grade teacher here in Albuquerque, and I'm so excited to share the stories of the amazing teachers of Albuquerque, the teachers that I work with, the teachers that you work with. On today's podcast, our second episode, we are talking to Missy Lowther, who is a fifth grade teacher at Georgia O'Keeffe Elementary. Missy is going through an interesting transition from second grade to fifth grade and jumping schools in the mix, and she's going to talk a little bit about that. But mostly she's going to talk about her passions in education, which include literacy and inspiring a love for reading in her students from second grade to fifth grade, and then also behavior modifications in the classroom so that her students can be successful and we can turn the negatives into positives really fast, have a quick turnaround so that learning can still happen. So welcome to today's episode. Let's dive in, shall we? We will feature an Albuquerque teacher that was nominated by their peers on the podcast. Nominations are open on the website, pineappleclassrooms.com. I'm here with Missy Lowther at Georgia O'Keeffe Elementary in her new classroom. And Missy was nominated by a teacher in APS who was the parent of one of the kids in Missy's classroom. So her kid was in Missy's classroom, who is Jen Johnson. Missy, had you met Jen before then?
Actually, no, and I had the pleasure of teaching both of her boys in my classroom at my other school, and that was the first experience I had meeting her was the 2 years that she was a parent in my classroom.
Was it interesting or, like, different in any way having a teacher as a parent in the classroom versus your average parents?
It always is because, well, they know so much, and you find yourself, you know, talking in abbreviations and initials during conferences, and then having to explain yourself to the other parent who is not in education. So it's they come in with a lot more background, so sometimes it's easier. She just had some great knowledge for me that she shared with me, so it helped me grow, so I was very thankful for that. And then, you know, she just had two of the best behaved kids in my class. So that was also a plus because I think she, when they got home, they were like, she's a teacher. How did you treat your teacher?
A different level of accountability.
Right, right.
Well, Jen actually nominated you for a specific reason. Did she tell you why?
She did not. I haven't talked to her yet.
So I sat down with her earlier in the week and I recorded our conversation. I'd like to play it for you now if that's okay.
Okay.
Well, Missy had both of my children in her classroom, and I've had the opportunity to be in a lot of classrooms and see a lot of different classroom setups and see how teachers work with children, and I just really think that Missy exemplifies what it means to be a master teacher. My children are extremely different as far as social skills, behavior, academic skills, and both my children thrived under her tutelage. They looked forward to going to school every day. Their social skills grew, their academic skills grew. And I think that's the true definition of a master teacher, somebody that can take children that are so different and see huge gains by the end of the year. And so just hearing their stories when they came home And just seeing their excitement for school is why I nominated her.
What's your reaction?
That is so flattering, especially coming from Jen Johnson, because I know the level of quality that she exudes when she's in the classroom. And she's a mentor to many other teachers in her role as not only an instructional coach, but as she moves forward in her career. So that was very flattering. I just don't know what to say. That's going to carry me for a few weeks.
So, Missy, what are you passionate about in education?
I'm passionate about education. Probably my biggest passion is reading. I'm an avid reader myself, and I love to share that with everyone. I read everything. I read the newspaper every morning, front to back. And I just gain a lot of knowledge from reading, a lot of pleasure, and I just want to share that with kiddos and show them that that's something they can do when they're bored, take them to another place. When they're anxious, can calm them. I'm passionate pretty much about reading and teaching children to read, which I had an opportunity to do a lot more of in second grade. This year's challenge, I'm joining a fifth grade team, and I don't know, different types of genres, I think, is what I'm looking forward to the most. Mythology, graphic novels, just sharing new genres with children.
I mean, I think you're hitting on something really important, which is that literacy isn't just a skill. It's a whole world that can open up, many worlds that open up. Mm-hmm. And I teach second grade, like you used to. This year, Missy's switching over to fifth grade. So I think the challenge then is, like, how do you tailor your message, which is love of literacy, love of reading for fifth graders?
Yes. Yeah, when there's so much other stimulation out there, or, you know, the video games. But I would even count in second grade if they had read the comic. Mm-hmm. The comics. I love the comics. And there's so much good strategies of inferencing in the comics. If it's funny, why do you know it's funny? So I would count that on their reading log if they read the comics that day. You know, if they could tell me, you know, read the street signs on their way from school to their house, that counts as reading. So they could write that down. So you just, you know, kind of, yeah, if they can read, they can do anything. They can go anywhere. They can find their way around. And I use it a lot personally. And hopefully for my students, it's kind of also a calming activity. One of my favorite things to do is a read aloud in class. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty active with my voices and with the way I present a read aloud to make it engaging and, you know, just to show them that that's a good kind of calming kind of practice too. That's a big thing for me.
I love that. So what does it look like in your classroom with, like, second graders when you know that you have achieved that goal of, like, inspiring a love of reading in your students?
It kind of goes back to what Ms. Johnson said was, you know, the kids will tell me a story. They'll tell me, oh, I read this book, or I'm hooked on this series. Or we had, you know, kind of book competitions, you know, like Caldecott Club. Can you read and test on all 25 books? And I would even give extra rewards in addition to what the library might give them, like a certificate. I would do it as a competition in class, just to kind of motivate them to read these different books. And so a lot of that is, you know, if they're telling me about a story or telling me about a character, or the biggest and best thing is if you're reading a story and they make a connection and they say, oh, you're reading about a mouse and there was a mouse in the story we read 2 weeks ago. That was really very cool when they make, you know, connections. It's like they're remembering. That's that comprehension piece. So I think that's one of the best ways I know that a student is being engaged, as if they're making those connections, even if it's text to text usually text to self is the fastest, easiest. You know, oh, I rode a skateboard kind of thing if you're reading about a child riding a skateboard. But when they make those text-to-text connections, they're reading. So
and loving it.
And loving it, and that's how I know. That's one of the ways I know, I guess.
In order for that to really work, you have to have space in your room for discourse.
Yes.
Which it has to be, like, really intentional. It sounds like you have as part of your read-aloud an intentional protocol, which is, all right, what connections can we make?
Right. We, my team in second grade last year did a really nice job not only doing the read-alouds and having, you know, comment time afterwards or even during. A lot of times I'll stop and ask questions or let them comment. If you see, you know, you see that child looking up at you with bright eyes, you're like, okay, they have something to say.
Yeah.
So I'll stop during the read-aloud, you know, ask them a question after I'm done. My favorite thing is when they say, oh, read the next chapter. And I'm like, well, we have to stop for today because we have things we need to do. We also did, as part of our homework packet, we did a response to reading, a written response to reading, which was really kind of neat because it would ask just, you know, compare and contrast yourself to the main character. How are you like this character? How are you not like this character? Or, you know, describe the setting. And, you know, so just real quick, they would choose one night, something they read for 20 minutes, answer these two real quick questions in writing about what you read. And reading those were really cool. And then sometimes it would, like on Friday when the homework packet was due, I would take a few minutes to just randomly pull a few out and just read them out, read out some of these responses. And, of course, then they wanted me to keep going with that. So that was a very cool way to kind of share and to know and to kind of build on their comprehension.
I like that a lot. It's adding another component besides just the reading log to not just, like, from, like, a logistical standpoint, add accountability, but also inspire and, like, leave room for that discourse and for students to really reflect on their learning wherever that happens to be that they are at, which I love.
Right.
So what I'm also curious about is, have there been times when, in the process of inspiring this love for students, you maybe had a struggle, like a student wasn't responding, or you felt like you couldn't make that connection with them?
You know, I don't know if it was directly, but my biggest regret is when I have a parent who kind of works against me. Mainly it's because I haven't really done my best job of communicating with them what I'm trying to do. And a lot of times it's a parent where the student is really struggling and needs the support of a special education teacher. And so I'm trying to get that route done. You know, that's very difficult for parents. But as an educator sitting here in a school, I know that that's the best thing for that child because I need support. I need support of a specially trained teacher to help this child. But when you get crossways with a parent because the parent doesn't want the child to go that direction and you're not communicating well that this is the best thing, and they get the impression you're giving up on the child, and that's not the case. That was my biggest regret. I can think of one student in particular, and I had never met the dad, and he came into the second conference of the year. I had met with mom many, many times. Mom, I was communicating well with mom, not communicating well with dad. So when dad came to the conference, he did not want to discuss any of that. He really wanted to have his say. And so that's how that conference went. He vented, and I ended the conference and just felt, I don't know, very defeated. And but it made me work harder for that little boy because he came into my classroom and I knew he loved school and I knew he wanted to be here because he had a smile on his face every day. And I just thought, I'm not going to let that, you know, keep us from what we're doing, me and this young man.
I love your commitment.
So, yeah. That was probably one of the hardest things is when I fail to communicate well with what I need to do. And because, you know, everything takes time and, you know, I'm trying to get through a conference quickly and, yeah, when I don't communicate well. So that's my big challenge these days, I think.
And what strikes me is, like, I think all educators have those moments where they do feel defeated in a similar way. Right. And when you have a week where too many of those happen in a row, you start to feel burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any tricks to keeping yourself from feeling burnt out?
I do get a massage once a month. You know, you do have to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. I do yoga. I walk a lot. I read before I go to bed to relax myself, to try and shut my brain off. And it's never, don't read anything educational before you go to sleep. I can tell you that. And you'll be up at 3 thinking, oh, I have to do that.
I have an idea.
You know, I just read, you know, really easy read books for me, to kind of turn your brain off and kind of recharge. Sleep's important. Eating well is important. Keeping yourself healthy is really important, taking care of you so you can be taking care of them.
Absolutely.
That's a big deal for me. But, and I also get a lot of strength from people like Miss Johnson and, you know, colleagues that are right around, you know, walk into the door next door and kind of say, this is what I did. I'm not sure it was right. You know, how'd I do? I'm a very social type teacher. I love to have my door open. I want people coming in and out. I want to be in everybody's classroom. I just want to know and grow. And so I ask a lot of questions. I do a lot of socializing. I do a lot of talking. Sometimes I'm a little nosy, I think. But I love to share and I love to be shared with. So that all gives me a lot of, it kind of re-energizes me when I'm down. I did cut my teeth in education, working in special education. With a wonderful mentor teacher, Ms. Patchett, who was a behavior modification type person, and I grew a lot in that. So I take on a lot of that. I use a lot of that. I'm big on behavior modification before, you know, going to any other kind of strategies. But you know, de-escalation, giving choices, you know, just win-win kind of situations are big for me. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I hear that you, in second grade, had a phenomenal never-ending clip chart. It's here in your fifth grade classroom. It looks great. We're going to post a picture of this on the blog. Ms. Johnson said that her son came home one day and said his clip had been moved up the tree.
Okay. And it changes with each theme that I do in my classroom. This year I'm using emojis, so, but it's I got it a few years ago, and I can't even think of the author right now. I always credit him when I'm giving paperwork to parents, but it is the clip chart. It's very, all based on real positive reinforcement. So you can go down the clip chart, but when I'm explaining this to the students, I always tell them, we're not even going to talk about this last little section that says parent contact. I said, because nobody ever goes there. And I don't want you to go there. So it is, and it's very fluid. It gives the student an opportunity, you know, if they've done something really great, it's immediate, go move, you know, clip up. And they'll tell them clip up. And they'll go and move their clip up the chart. And there's rewards for being, you know, top of the chart, off the chart. And then, you know, if they make an unwise choice, if they make a bad choice, and they move down the clip chart, then as a teacher, or as the adult in the room, the authority figure in the room, you have to watch for the next time that they've turned it around. So they're back up the chart real quick. Because you don't want a child to end up, you know, at parent contact. Or, you know, you didn't make very good choices today. It does happen. But it's very fluid. And it's kind of funny. I always challenge the kids. I always tell them, in my career, I have, you know, these fluorescent lights on the ceiling, And, you know, they always ask, well, what happens after this and what happens after that? Well, the top of the chart says outstanding. If you get to the top of the chart on top of outstanding, then, well, where do we go next? Well, then you're on my lanyard. Okay, well, what about then? Well, then you're in my hair. Well, what happens next? Well, I don't know. You know, it's only happened like twice. I've had students go on the lights, and I'll clip their clip on the light. And then they're like, well, what after that? And it's like, well, you have to go down the light, and then you're out the door. You know, so they're always wanting to know, what's next, what's next? And I always tell them, I've had two boys in my entire career, all this time I've been teaching, I've had two boys that have been on the light. I haven't had anyone out the door yet. Wow. But many on my lanyard, many in my hair, which is kind of tricky if you forget to take them out of your hair and you're heading home for the day and you're like, what's in your hair? But it's fun. I mean, and then you're walking around out in the playground and they're like, Miss Lowther, why do you have a clip in your hair? And oh, my student is having this off the chart kind of day. They, you know, went off the chart. They're on my line, out my hair, you know, kind of thing. So it's a very positive reinforcement.
Absolutely.
And it works great in second grade. I'm going to try it in fifth. We'll see if I can keep that positive reinforcement going. I'm hoping I don't get too many rolled eyes at me. But I like finding those moments that, hey, you're doing it just right. Hey, you're following my rule. You're keeping me happy. I use a lot of the whole brain teaching also. So, you know, that fifth rule is, you know, keep Miss Lowther happy. And so, you know, go clip up. You're keeping me happy. You're doing what I need you to do. So, you know, and then it's a really nice way of turning attention away from negative behaviors, but also just really rewarding all those kids that you have that are always doing it just right. And sometimes you forget about them when you're dealing with the negative behaviors. So that's what I like about the clip chart, and I've been using it probably 5 years now. Yeah, and 1 year I had a tree. And so instead of saying, you know, great effort, excellent choices, you are on a branch, you are on the leaf. I think it had a sun. So you're on the sun, you know, kind of thing. So it's kind of fun to kind of even modify it to go along with what the theme is of your classroom. And I think that's what he was mentioning was I had the tree that year.
I've seen a lot of clip charts. This is the most dynamic clip chart I've ever seen.
Okay.
So. Congratulations. It's awesome. I'm very excited about
you.
It.
Thank you. And then there's ways of letting them, you know, like on a clip, if they, I used to have like a sticker, like they'd have a little like frog when you did frogs or something, and they'd put a sticker on their frog if they got to excellent choices or outstanding. And once they got 10, they got to go to the treasure box. Or I would think of some reward once they've, you know, 10 days of, you know, being top of the chart, up in the upper part of the chart. Last year, I was just putting marks on the back of their clip, and then once they got 10, I changed their name to a different color. Like right now, they're written in black.
Sure.
So I'd get a blue, and they'd be blue. I've seen a lot of people put little jewels on
them. I've seen the gems. Yeah.
So different ways to do it. So you can keep track, and then, you know, that goes home. When they've got 10, then it goes home, and so then they've got something to explain to their parents. I've got this clothespin, this clip, and the reason why I'm bringing it home is because I got a new one, because... So it's a nice way to communicate with parents also. There's also little quick notes you can do if you need that daily communication with parents. You know, I have a little, you know, quarter sheet of paper that, you know, says where they ended up, and I've done that before, so... A lot of the times I've been using, lately I've been using Class Dojo, which is just a really quick and easy way to let them know, because, you know, when they do something good, you can give them a ding. And so the parents know immediately because it sends them a message.
And what the ding is for, also.
And what the ding is for, right.
Which is pretty cool.
So that's been working out really well. We'll see. See how it goes this year.
Thank you for sharing.
Uh-huh. My pleasure.
When you are doing these behavior modifications and when you're doing like this work to really inspire love for reading, what impact does that have on student learning?
Well, I think the behavior modification, just allowing students to kind of self-regulate and understand what's going on when they are in that state or not able to learn at that moment. I'm upset, or, you know, someone's bothering me. And then you have to, you know, figure out what those needs are. Okay, you're sitting next to someone that's bothering you. Here are your choices. You can move your body, or, you know, there's other places in the classroom where you can go to do your work. What do you need? You tell me. And having them kind of figure things out. And then the next time it's like, oh, this person's bothering me. I remember when Miss Lowther said I could move to anywhere else. And so then they just up and do it. And to me, that's like one of those amazing moments. It's like, oh, they learned the lesson I wanted them to learn, that they don't have to stay there and escalate the agitation. Move away.
Right.
Go finish your work. Go be quiet. Do you need to go out in the hallway where it's quiet? Go out in the hallway where it's quiet. I use a lot of sign language, so I'm working with a group, you know, I'll show them some signs so they let me know where they're going, what they're going to be doing, so I can keep track of them. But I do like them to be, you know, sometimes I need the quiet moments to read, or I just need a quiet moment. I need to work with these 5 children. We need to be left alone. So that's how I use that, the behavior modification, just to help them kind of de-escalate. Also, too, if they're feeling kind of, you know, sluggish, okay, what do you need? Do you need to walk down the hall and get a drink of water? Do you need something to chew on? I do allow gum in my room because my master's thesis was based on the effects of chewing gum on little brains, and it really does help them. Well, certain students that need that, the oral. So, you know, just kind of figuring out what they need. You need to stick a gum in your mouth. Sometimes I will give out mints as rewards because I know that peppermint is kind of one of those, I don't want to say stimulating, but rejuvenating, you know, it's a peppermint, so it kind of
absolutely
keeps them up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just having them figure out what do you need to have to put you to where you can learn the best. And the second half of your question had to do with that love of reading. And I do know it's a struggle for some kids, and I do know that it's completely developmental for each individual student. I had a friend of my daughter's told me the other day she did not start reading. She didn't feel like she started reading until 3rd grade.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays it's like, whoa, wait a minute, you should be reading in kindergarten. But it's just not that way for every child. So, I don't know, sometimes that's why I like the comics or even the graphic novels, because if you can find out, again, what motivates a child or what they need, do they need more visuals? Do they need no visuals? I've had students like that where I've literally had to put my hand on the picture so that they would pay attention to the text.
Absolutely.
So their fluency would pick up, because we were working on fluency, but the pictures were distracting. So helping them figure out what they need and how they can best do it is big for me.
And for students.
And for the students, yeah. So, yeah, I use anything. And I'm a big proponent of fostering the love of reading. So rarely in my classroom will you see me, unless it's part of the, you know, story of the week. I do have them read certain things I ask them to read. But if they're doing read to self or read to someone, for me, that's total choice. They get to decide what they want to read and, you know, how they go about it, where they're going to sit, what they're going to read. I do go through the lessons of, you know, how to pick a just right fit book, but we also talk about different ways to read a book. You can read a book by just looking at the pictures and gleaning the information of what's going on. There's that inferencing again, which is a high order strategy. So I always have been a big advocate of, if you're going to sit down and I'm going to have you read to self and I'm going to build your stamina, because I need you to, you know, be quiet while I'm working here, you're working there, this is your quiet time to read. They need to do it the way they're choosing to do it, to build the stamina. So, you know, maybe they are just looking through the books. Maybe they're not reading for that instance something that's on their level or a little bit challenging than their level, but it doesn't need to be, because that's what they're going to get with me when they're working with me, or when we're doing a whole group. So I'm big on that. Build the love of reading, and I don't know. I like to make it exciting. I like to do, I'm so excited we get to do Battle of the Books in fifth grade.
Yes.
Because I have a big plan. I'm not really, really competitive, but I like to make it a challenge, to make it a game, and we'll see how that goes.
Watch out for your class.
I know, I'm hoping.
So I have one last question for you. Do you have any advice for a teacher who is going into their first year, like one nugget that you're like, just this one thing you can try to implement or think about this year?
Well, teachers never have enough time. But I don't know. I've just had so many great mentors and people that I talk to. I'm from a family of teachers. I have four sister-in-laws, and three of them are teachers.
Wow. Yeah.
So elementary teachers. So just being really open and, like you said, asking questions and having those really valuable conversations with your colleagues, that's kind of paramount. Keep up your energy and be willing to share your ideas, because seasoned teachers really get a lot from you also, because you have the energy and you have the brand new ideas. And sometimes our ideas are, I've done this 3 years in a row now. So just be, willing to share and open and social. And if it doesn't get done, it doesn't get done. And because you're never going to have enough time to get everything. You're never going to have enough time to do everything you wanted to do. But if you can, at the end of the day, say, oh, that one thing went really great, and just pat yourself on the back and leave school knowing that you did that one thing really, really great. And whatever didn't get done is going to either not get done or get done the next day. So don't get bogged down in the paperwork, too. There's a lot of demands on us for paperwork. And you just need to take your time and spend it making your classroom the best environment, making your lessons as engaging as you possibly can, and using that passion, the things you're passionate about. I'm passionate about poetry. I'm passionate about singing. And just bringing those things into your classroom and sharing those with your students. And being that human person, sometimes a little dorky, I think, but being, a human person, so they know you respect them and they respect you. That's kind of big in a classroom environment. So making that environment pleasurable for you as well as your students, so that you can ignore the paperwork sometimes. I don't know. That was more than one nugget.
That was a lot of nuggets.
That was a lot of nuggets.
That was a 10-piece meal. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Pineapple Classrooms. Also, big thank you goes out to Missy Lowther for opening up her classroom, literally, to me to have this conversation about what she's passionate about in education and to share so many great tips and ideas with us. Also, thank you to Jen Johnson for giving a shout out to Missy and saying, this is an amazing teacher. I think you should really talk to her and people can really learn from what she's doing in her classroom. It's those sorts of nominations that really make this project possible. So please go on to the website, pineappleclassrooms.com, and go to the nominations tab and nominate a teacher who's doing something big or small, but it is truly incredible, because we would love to, all of us would learn to love to learn from them. I also wanted to say that up on the blog, we have pictures from Missy's classroom, some of the amazing things she's working on. You can see pictures of the clip chart we were talking about earlier and some favorite resources she has. I also had the opportunity this week to go back to E.G. Ross, to John Keelan's classroom, and take some pictures now that his classroom is all set up. And those pictures are on the blog also. A peek into an amazing teacher's room is always wonderful. So thank you to both teachers for opening up their classrooms. And I can't wait to see you into our next teacher's classroom. And that episode is going to air on August 29th. You can subscribe on iTunes and you'll get a little alert on your phone once the episodes are posted. Thank you again for listening in. Have a wonderful week. It's back to school time.